Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
And I mean, I made it very clear to them that what we have to do is focus on getting the resources where the vulnerable are to be able to get testing done, to be able to get the appropriate identification where proper and where appropriate to isolate and contact trace if we can, but also to help mitigate in a community that is suffering and suffering much more disproportionately.
That's Dr. Anthony Fauci from the White House a little more than an hour ago discussing his conversation with members of the Congressional Black Caucus. Members want to know what the White House plan is for dealing with the high rate of coronavirus infection and deaths among African Americans. Tonight, we're talking about the impact of the pandemic on the Black community, and we're drilling down on why this is happening and what can be done about it. My guests are former Maryland Congress member Kwesi Enfume and Dr. Nicolette Louis-Saint, Executive Director of Healthcare Ready, and also someone who worked on the Ebola crisis during the Obama administration. Lines are open. If you have a comment or question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Louis-Saint, Congressman Enfume, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Dr. Louis-Saint, can you hear me?
I sure can. Good evening. Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Congressman Enfume, talk to me a little bit about what you just heard from Dr. Anthony Fauci in his comments regarding his conversation with the Congressional Black Caucus.
Well, I've heard what most of us have already known, and this is not the first time Tony has said this. He has, over the years, continued to point out the fact that there are these ongoing disparities, and some of them are genetically disposed, but others are not. And so when you have a group of people with pre-existing conditions, whether they are high rates of cancer or diabetes or obesity or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, things like emphysema, bronchitis, and then cardiovascular disease and asthma and lupus and even elevated lead levels, it means that you are already fighting for your health with one hand tied behind your back. So that when we see the onslaught of a virus such as COVID-19, it's exacerbated by the fact that the people who need the ability to fight the most have a weakened system. Because those same people, our people, in many instances are the most exposed outside of doctors and nurses because we have service jobs, not able to telework and that sort of thing. You have to be on the job or you don't get paid. Many are in frontline service jobs as cashiers, bus drivers, you name it. And so the risk of exposure is significantly higher. And then when you consider many of our communities are cramped quarter communities, we're living on top of one another. A circulation of a virus such as this is even more exacerbated. So when there is a lack of testing in the neighborhoods where the most affected population groups live, we see the sort of tragic tale that's playing out now, but it is not something that could not have been predicted. People have been saying for years, you've got to focus on health disparities. And so I focused my time for 4 years at the National Institute of Health in the Institute of Minority Health Disparities, trying to underscore the need to do more research and more testing and to make more things available to the most affected population groups. I spent some time as executive director of the National Medical Association emphasizing the same thing. I think that most people realize that the problem is worse than we tend to think about it, because when we're not in a crisis, we don't think about it, and that's the problem.
Dr. Louis-Saint, what the congressman just spoke about is for health practitioners and even, you know, those of us who, you know, like myself, like yourself, you know, we're Black folks. We know that these things have been happening in our communities, in our families. But now here comes this novel coronavirus. We've never seen anything like this before. And with the numbers, not just in Washington, D.C., but the horrible numbers in Louisiana and New York and in Miami, Black folks have been hit really, really hard. What can we do right now?
Absolutely. One of the things that I always like to remind us is that disasters don't cause disparities, they reveal them. And so it's really important to remember that what we are seeing right now is a reflection of the inequities and the disparities that have long been at play that are being further exposed by this coronavirus pandemic. They're not being created by it. So in terms of what we can do now, the congressman brought up, I think, some of the most important points, especially as it relates to exposure. We have to understand what is the likelihood of exposure. We have to understand what ways we can go about mitigating exposure. And we have to, as a community and as a collective, really fight to make sure that the ways in which we are able to protect those who do have to be on the front lines, I think now more than ever, most people would not argue with the fact that a grocery store worker, a pharmacy worker, a pharmacy tech is an essential worker. So we have to make sure that we are minimizing their exposure. Are they protected? Do they have the equipment that they need to be able to be protected? Are they able to work in ways that allow them to be safe? Are they able to get to work and get home in ways that minimize their exposure? How are we continuing to test and protect those groups? How are we ensuring that those individuals who do not have to leave the home can avoid leaving the home? How do we make sure that people who are in SNAP or WIC don't have to go into the supermarket in order to use those benefits? Those are things that will help us to minimize exposure. So that's first and foremost in what we can do. The other thing that we can do...
Go ahead, please.
The other thing that we can do is to make sure that if there is a diagnosis, that we are tending to our health. So we do know that there are certain chronic illnesses that will make one's immune system have to fight harder to combat this very dangerous virus. And so ways that we can make sure that our community has access to the medicines that they need, the prescriptions, not just about treatment for coronavirus, but can you manage your diabetes in the middle of this pandemic? Do you have the medicines that you need to control your hypertension? Do you have the medicine that you need for your autoimmune diseases? Those are as important right now to making sure that one's immune system can, if infected, can fight this virus. So I think those are the types of things we need to be thinking about and talking about.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on the Black community. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Lines are open again at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Well, Dr. Lewis Saint, I want to ask you this, but I also want the congressman to comment on this as well. We have heard Dr. Fauci in weeks past, as well as we've also heard state health officials discuss which comes first in the wake of this coronavirus pandemic. No matter what your underlying condition is, once you have it, that is where the focus is. It doesn't matter whether you have asthma or diabetes or any of the other underlying factors. Once you have been infected by the coronavirus, that is where the focus is. Your thoughts about that?
I think that's exactly true. But when it comes to health or health policy, we can't have an either-or approach. A lot of the individuals that I personally know who are fighting this disease right now are doing so and also having to maintain or try to maintain a chronic illness. And I think that's exactly what Dr. Fauci's point was, is that what we know is that up until you are infected, maintaining your health in the presence of that chronic illness is the challenge. But at the point when you are infected, controlling coronavirus, making sure that your immune system can actually fight that virus is the most important thing you can do. And so that, I think, is the essence of that point. But again, it's really not an either or. You cannot put, you know, your needs as it relates to maintaining your hypertension or diabetes or autoimmune disease on the shelf until you are done fighting the virus. And so you do have to do both. And I think that compiles the stress and the challenges to our communities as they are thinking about fighting an infection of this sort.
202 209-781-0202. 209-781-0. We are talking about the coronavirus pandemic and its impact on African Americans. Let's go to Linda, calling from Suitland. Linda, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello.
Hi.
It just seems like Black people are always the target of things that happen in the United States. What's been done has been done wrong, and it comes from the Trump administration. But my point is this. Why is it that Black people are always the target? I mean, they are in these major cities that have predominantly a Black population. You have how many Black people have died here? How many Black people died here? How many Black people? What about other people? How many white people have died from the virus? How many people, other people of color have died from the virus? Those are some statistics that I also would like to know, but it just seems like it has become race-based, you know, due to Black people. We're always the ones that get exposed. And back in 1918, we couldn't even go to a hospital and get care. So,
Let me see what Congressman Mfume has to say about that, because there's, for example, in Maryland, there's been a lot of information out there that perhaps Linda has missed. Congressman?
Well, I think I understand Linda's point here. There have been white people, clearly, who have died and are dying from the disease, as well as Latinos and Asian Americans. I think the emphasis here on Black people is that we are disproportionately affected. And so if you're in Chicago and you're 30% of the population but 70% of the deaths, it rings a different kind of alarm bell. It doesn't say that other people aren't dying, but it begs the question, why are Black people dying more? Which goes to the heart of some of the things that we mentioned earlier. And a lot of this is driven by political decisions. I mean, we could beat the drum all night long about Donald Trump's inability to act quickly and how many lives could have been saved, whether they were Black, white, Latino, Asian, or anything else. But that kind of slow leadership or leading from behind exacerbates the situation. So the emphasis here is not so much just about people dying and white people being a part of that and others. The emphasis here is we realize that while the country may have a cold, we have pneumonia, no pun intended, mm-hmm. but this is hurting our communities more. In the zip code 21215, which is in northwest Baltimore, that is the highest death rate zip code in the state. And so while people are dying everywhere, my mind wants to know why is that. And then we go back to some of the things that Dr. Lassant said earlier and some of the things that I said about the things that we face differently. We're greater exposure as a result of the fact that we are not always teleworking. We live in close quarters, which helps to spread the disease. There is second and third generation poverty with food deserts everywhere and the inability to get proper health care. And then there are all the respiratory pre-existing health conditions that make it tough to fight.
Mm-hmm. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the coronavirus pandemic and its impact on African-American communities across this country. If you have a comment or a question, please share your thoughts at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Lewis-Saint, I want to drill down a little bit on what you said at the very beginning of this conversation, where you said these kinds of situations become very, very revealing. How important is the race-based information that is now starting to come out for people such as yourself, medical professionals that are part of this fight? Dr. Lewis-Saint, just go right ahead.
Yes, I actually want to take a step further back and begin with what we know to be true about communities of color, especially in the United States. There is data that is about all disasters, but even recent polling that's been done around the coronavirus pandemic that actually shows that what we know is that Black and brown communities are even more concerned about the impacts of coronavirus, but also feel less prepared. And so I point that out to first say that it is not a matter of not being concerned about it. It is not a matter of not recognizing this as a credible threat, but also recognizing their vulnerability in the face of the pandemic. And so by the time we get to a point of measuring who has been infected or who has succumbed to illness, having a sense of that race-based and place-based data gives us a sense of who is being infected, what are the transmission rates, what communities do we need to hone in on. And the congressman makes a great point about understanding, even across the state, if there are specific zip codes that have 60 or 80% African Americans in that zip code, and they are bearing the brunt of the infections, then we need to understand what circumstances are causing either repeated exposure or putting people at greater risk, and what public health non-pharmaceutical interventions can be taken to help mitigate that risk. And so having that data is a really critical part of not just understanding who's dying, but helping public health to understand what actions can be taken today to protect our community.
Well said. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on African American communities. Lines are still open. If you were on the phone holding, stay with us. That includes Michael calling from Suitland. We're going to talk to you next. You will be able to hear the program, so stay with us. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise I will get to your phone calls. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Angela Stribling is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on SiriusXM Channel 141 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are drilling down on why the coronavirus pandemic is hitting African Americans especially hard and what can be done about it. My guests are former Maryland Congressman Kwesi Mfume and Dr. Nicolette Louis-Saint, Executive Director of Healthcare Ready. She also worked on the Ebola crisis during the Obama administration. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines. Michael calling from Suitland. Thanks for calling, Michael. What's on your mind?
How you doing, sir? How you doing, everybody doing?
Just fine.
I don't have a question or a comment. I have both. Like, I understand that the black communities are dying, but what are we doing? Look at the news. Look how many people was down to Wolf. But then we cry for help. You know, I live in a black community. I go to the laundromat. I see the young brothers outside, no masks, no 6 feet apart. They're passing blunts back and forth to each other. But then we cry Wolf and cry help, then blame Donald Trump. I don't like Donald Trump just like everybody else. But he's not to blame. It's ourself. And once we get to know that it's ourself, then things will change. But once, you know, us as a community, black community, we're taking it for a joke, you know, and it's sad. Then when we get sick and we're dying, we got to point the finger at somebody. You know, it's us. It's us.
And, Michael, you said you also had a question. What's your question?
I don't have a question. I just wanted to make that comment.
Okay, no problem. So let me start.
I was going to start with you,
Congressman. Go right ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael makes a good point about not taking this stuff seriously, that it is a joke. It's not a joke. It's not a myth. And, you know, last night I went to the intersection of North and Penn.
There it is.
And Harold, you know where that is. That's
I know where it is.
Of the Freddie Gray riots. And at 8 o'clock at night, you know, many people were out talking about this as the white man's disease, it's not going to affect me. And I would try to talk about social distancing, but some folks didn't want to hear that. It was like, hey, how are you doing? And I'm okay. It's not going to affect me. That myth has been around since this disease was first announced, and it's damaging from the perspective that if you buy into it, you're not going to protect yourself. And that really pains me. It's really not a joke at all. Now, he's right. We have a responsibility to do whatever we can. This is not all about the occupant of the White House. It's the occupant of our bodies, which are ourselves, And to the extent that we can help ourselves live longer by taking better care of ourselves, that's important also. And it's not a put down on people. It's just to say that we've got to take some control over our health. Right now, black people in this country are dying every day from comorbidities. In other words, they got one, two, or three things going on at the same time. Life expectancy for black men is at 68 years old, for black women at 77. On the other side of the scale, white men live to be 74, and average white women 80. And so if you are in the Baltimore-Washington corridor, it's even further exacerbated because of homicides that are taking place from D.C. through Prince George's all the way up to Baltimore, which is driving down the life expectancy rate for black men to about 56 years. I mean, can you imagine that? So there are a lot of things going on in addition to COVID-19 that we really have to keep our eyes on.
I also want you to, you know, talk a little bit more about that because, as you know, I live in Baltimore. I live in Northeast Baltimore. And yesterday, after seeing my mother, who lives in Prince George's County, Mom was on the porch. I'm on the walkway, not 6 feet, but 12 feet away from my beloved, crazy, wonderful mother. And my sister was there earlier. She also 12 feet away. But as I'm driving back home, driving up Howard Street, and I see, you know, a bunch of brothers, about 7 or 8 of them posing in front of a van off of taking a picture. And no social distancing. Why are we not getting this message? It really bothers me.
Well, I just want to jump in and offer another perspective, because I think part of what we have to realize is that this is really the first major disease outbreak in the era of social media. And the way in which we have to push out information right now, the number of avenues that are pushing out misinformation right now, are also hurting the effort. And so, you know, I go back to those numbers that I continue to look at from Pew, Healthcare Ready's done polls. It's not always that black people are not taking it seriously, but there's so much bad information out there that what you're doing right now in your show is so critical. The work that others are doing to push out messages is so critical. I've seen Congressman Infume doing Zoom sessions and Facebook Lives, pushing out other information. And that is such an important part of this, because there's so much misinformation that we have to counter that misinformation with credible information that explains that social distancing is not a myth. It's not something that is just for white people. It is a life-saving measure, but it also has to come from people that we trust. So I just want to think about it from that perspective as well, because it is a challenge, but it's also an opportunity to think about how we are using our respective platforms to counter some of those messages with the right message. And eventually it will get through. And my hope is that it's not at the point where there is an infection, or worst case, an infection-related death, that it takes for that to get through. But there is a lot of misinformation out there, and that is something that we are seeing as a major problem in this response.
And I think you have to your point, we do have to meet people where they are. And, you know, and honestly, I have been, since the outbreak started, I have been talking to my friends in some of the private Facebook groups that I belong to, talking to people on the phone about, you know, the conspiracy theories and where this stuff comes from. And, these are black folks. These are my friends. These are my acquaintances. These are people that I, you know, that I love, that, you know, from, you know, my platform have been trying to push this issue forward. But I don't know whether or not either one of you saw some of the video that was coming out of Pensacola, Florida today, over the weekend, where there was this huge, I don't know, block party, hundreds and hundreds of black people just kind of gathered, and you could hear in the background people talking about the police coming to help them be social distant, but because there were so many people and the police just did not want to confront, you know, this group of emotional black folks. And again, those are the kind of things that bother me, because it doesn't seem that we are not getting that. And it's very, very, you know, very, very painful. You know, Congressman, we saw what happened in Charles County a couple of weeks ago. There was a party A man had 60 people in a party in a 550-square-foot apartment. It's just crazy to me.
Yeah, I agree with the doctor. It is a matter of not getting it out through the right sources that are creditable. And that's why the Black Church is so important in this fight, and Black social organizations, fraternal organizations, and others that still have a network into people who have networks into other people. I don't think that most people are not taking it serious, but the younger ones in many respects are, and that's unfortunate because this really doesn't have an age assigned to it. You know, Harold, I think I've kind of lived so long that I put this in another kind of perspective. I mean, years ago, people were worried about mononucleosis, which was the kissing disease. And it was like, oh, my God, I can't kiss anybody. I might get that. But we've gone through so many things since then, like SARS and MERS and H1N1, the spine flu, Ebola, as the doctor knows, that we've got to assume that there are going to continue to be outbreaks such as this. 1918 was the anomaly with the Spanish flu. 675,000 Americans died. And I only pray that we're not going to get anywhere near that, but we've got to realize, as I said before, at some point in time, we've got to do a better job at trying to take care of our health where we can, recognizing that we've got all kinds of stresses on us, like 2 and 3 generations of blatant racism that work quietly on a person's immune system in the wrong way, like trying to find a way to make sure that we are providing the proper cures. One of the things that I have been advocating, particularly with this crisis we're in, and hoping and mandating and trying to push the Congress to look at, is that we need right away mobile testing centers in the zip codes that are most effective, because we could be saving lives, preventing infection, preventing deaths, and rather than waiting for people to come to us. And that's got to be a priority, though. That's why I talked earlier about the need for good leadership, leadership that understands and leadership that acts with data in such a way that we're able to help people, not hurt people.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Marie, calling from Upper Marlboro. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Marie, are you there? We lost Marie. Call back if you can, Marie. I'd certainly want to hear what you have to say about that. Dr. Lewis-Saint, can you talk to me a little bit about your experience with Ebola, how this is different and how it is similar, and what people really need to understand about that?
Sure. So this is definitely not my first disease outbreak, but as an emergency manager, I've responded to many different events, including Maria and others. Ebola, from the federal perspective, it was different for a few reasons, and one of the things that I always think it's important to remember is that while the U.S. took a very aggressive preparedness posture, recognizing that the pathogen was so dangerous and the risk to the globe was so great, it really was not a community transmission event in the United States. What we were focused on doing and what the president was doing was supporting, at the request of President Sirleaf Johnson, her request to assist the people of Liberia and support the people of West Africa as they contended with that disease. One really critical thing that happened, and we continue to see the WHO respond in this way, and we hear this from Dr. Tedros and others, is the recognition that a disease outbreak anywhere is a threat to all of us globally. So as a global community, the need to respond in a way that protected not just the people of America, but also the people of West Africa, was quite clear. Another piece about disease outbreaks is that you learn more as the outbreak continues. And so we were in a constant state of working to make sure that we were learning as much as we could, so that not just in West Africa, but across the globe, as people were preparing, as healthcare workers were deploying to West Africa and returning, and sometimes returning to their countries with Ebola, that we knew more about how to treat them so that they could survive. The initial estimates for Ebola showed us that if we did nothing in August or September, by January, we would have lost at least 1 million lives. And I'm really proud to say that the coordination and the work that we did allowed us to not see a number close to that. But the reality is that any fatality is one fatality too many. But we were able to really invest in a system that we're even leveraging now. The Global Health Security Agenda, which was an initiative that was started by the Obama White House that continues in the global community, was funded for 5 years through the Ebola response, through that Ebola supplemental funding from Congress. That funding actually expired in September, but there's a lot of capacity in the global health system strengthening level, as well as in a lot of the major cities in the United States, that was still leveraging that Ebola funding to respond to coronavirus.
So, go ahead, finish your point.
It's definitely something to consider as it relates to how we're actually investing in preparing our communities and our health authorities to respond to a system, but it's also a lesson that the investments that we make in the global community will always prepare us for the next disaster.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to James calling from Laurel. James, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Praise God. I wanted to just throw a couple of things out there. One, when we listen to social media, stay in the social media, even the news, and we are bombarded with a lot of the information about disease and sickness, the mind stores these things, especially when it's done repetitiously. And then we find a belief in it, and the next thing you know, we're sick. And then the other conspiracies that go on with the chemtrails or the just the things that, you know, the 5G network that they say is affecting us, because we live in a vibratory universe. We are electrical beings, each and every one of us. So the bodies are like antennas. We receive and we put out information. And with all that being said, who knows what this really is? I think it's very favorable if we just build the immune system, stay away from a lot of the verbiage that goes on, and focus on being healthy. Put in your mind, in your subconscious mind, you know, do it repetitiously. Put earphones on and go to bed, because when you go to sleep, you're in a theta state, and you receive information, because the subconscious mind runs the body. It runs everything.
Well, James, let me see if, first of all, Dr. Louis Saint can address what you're sharing with us, and then I'd like the congressman to comment as well. Dr. Louis Saint?
Sure. So to your point that all we can do is protect our own health and focus on maintaining a state that allows for us to be healthy and prepared, absolutely. But we do know what this is. I think there's been enough science done to show us that this is a virus. This is a novel coronavirus. It's not the first of these types of things that we've seen. But it is a real virus, and we know that it's a credible threat, and we do have enough data to tell us where it also came from in the Wuhan region of the Hubei province of China. So while there are a lot of other theories that have to do with 5G, which is actually radiation and not a biological threat or virus in any way, we know what it is, and I think that's a very important part of understanding how to protect ourselves. So I fully take your point, and I also hear you when you point out something that I've been saying to many people. Immersing yourself in all of the news and all of the information and every press conference and briefing is not going to help. It could actually cause more stress. This is a very stressful time filled with a lot of anxiety, and that doesn't help your health. So turn away when you can. Do everything you can to protect your health, but immersing yourself in the news of the day isn't necessarily keeping you informed. Getting the good information that you can from credible sources will, but making sure that you're maintaining your health is absolutely the right thing to do right now.
And what about the messaging, Congressman? Because I think that's one of the things that James is talking about. And early on, when this was coming to America, there were a lot of confusing messages.
Well, I think... this is just my personal opinion. You know, the news media searches for sensationalism, and oftentimes the facts be damned. And if I can make something more sensational, I'll have more viewers the next time in the next quarter hour, so my share goes up, so I can charge more money for commercials. And real factual news often gets left to the documentaries or to something other than that. So there was a lot of sensationalism. But the bottom line here is that, and I need to go back to what the last caller said, we do have a responsibility, as Dr. Lassant said, to get the information so we know how to deal with what we're dealing with. You can't do that without proper information, and you've got to filter that out of all of the misinformation that's coming in. But we also have a responsibility to understand that our bodies are our temples, and we can't defile our temples by a bad diet that overlooks things, by excessive drinking, by smoking, by anything. And I'm not trying to put anybody down. I'm simply saying life is fragile, and what we do to our temples oftentimes reflects itself later in life in terms of whether or not we live to our expected life expectancy, whether or not we are more prone to disease. I mean, there's some things like hypertension where we know there's a genetic disposition, but there's so many other things. If we start early in life, if we start our young people on the right track, that we can kind of get ahead of. Now, I don't know how you get ahead of this virus itself except to take the necessary precautions and do what you have to do. But my mind this evening is thinking about all the seniors out there who have lived through so much and find themselves now living through this. Their example is something we ought to focus on because they're not taking this lightly. They are very seriously looking at it and trying to find a way to deal with it and saying to many others, this is real. It really is real. And, you know, the lack of real government intervention here concerns me. So when this is over, and it will be over one day, we've got to ask ourselves, why can't we get the National Institutes of Health, the Centers for Disease Control, HRSA, and all the other organizations to do what they're supposed to do with proper congressional oversight that demands answers and actions so that we are proactive and not reactive the next time around? But I don't know that that's going to happen, Harold. I spent 5 years as a principal investigator up until 2018 in Prince George's County running the Health Policy Research Consortium trying to ring the bell that while things look like they're okay right now, they really aren't, and we've got to get ready for tougher times. And now the tougher times are here.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Reggie, calling from Richmond, Virginia. Reggie, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, I'm praying for the staff and management to be safe out there. My issue, when you have former President Obama dealing with not one but two health crises, the country wasn't shut down. And I think Ebola from right now is far worse than what we're dealing with now. And look how the Occupy the White House first started out with the help of his media people. This is just a cold. Don't worry. It'll be okay. And I'm sorry, but people want to come up here and attack our young folks. But, again, help me understand. When President Obama was there dealing with this, people were taking it serious because of their leadership. And I think the leadership has a lot to do with it. You got those governors down in the southern states that Governor George recently just said, well, you know, guess what? We're going to open the beaches back up. Oh, I made a mistake. So I'm not going to lay this all to young people lap, but leadership, in my opinion, have been calculated. Maybe I'm Steven Spielberg, but they've been calculated on how they rolled this up with the help of the people in the media and the lies they've told. So I'm not going to put it all on young folks. I'll put it on leadership that has dropped the ball, in my opinion.
Well, and this is, let me say this. This is why I asked Dr. Louis Saint about the difference between Ebola and the novel coronavirus, and I need to go back to her to address what you're saying about the differences and the seriousness of this compared to the seriousness of the Ebola outbreak. Dr. Louis Saint?
Absolutely. So I just want to start by saying I take your point and I hear you, and I agree that we cannot make this about blaming young people. We also have to look at the decisions of our leader. Today, the lieutenant governor of Louisiana said that maybe he should have had a different stance when it came to saying that they should have continued the parades and the celebrations. And Louisiana is one of the states that's being hardest hit right now. In a state that is majority Black, we are seeing so many deaths as a result of not taking those stay-at-home orders and putting them in place and not canceling more events sooner. So absolutely, our leader's ability to understand the public health information and make the decisions in the best interest of public health is a critical part of this. But to your point about the differences between, you're right, President Obama had H1N1, he also had Ebola. And those are really different viruses. So that's point number one. Ebola is a very infectious, very what we would call pathogenic virus. The disease course is extremely difficult. The way that someone becomes infectious, the fact that someone is most infectious through all of their fluids, and that you actually have to have fluid-to-fluid transfer to be infected with Ebola makes it different. The thing about the coronavirus that is particularly difficult to contain is just how infectious it is, but from droplets. So, you know, there's studies that are showing 6, 12, 13 feet of droplet spray from a single cough or sneeze is enough to actually move coronavirus into someone else's nasal passages and infect them. So that's something we have to consider, but also the fact that the asymptomatic are carriers of the virus and in infecting people who are not as fortunate as to be asymptomatic and are succumbing from to the illness. And so there's some very big differences. When you are infected with Ebola, you are clearly infected with Ebola. There's no such thing as an asymptomatic Ebola patient. But when it comes to coronavirus, you can be asymptomatic, and that is dangerous because you can be standing on the corner or going to the market and be asymptomatic and infect someone else who may not have the same fortune. So there are some very important differences. But again, the leader was different. I think the type of communication was different. The strategy was different. It wasn't that there wasn't a pandemic plan in place and there wasn't a pandemic crisis action plan, both at the federal and state levels, to make sure that if Ebola actually became a community transmission event across the United States, that schools wouldn't close and hospitals wouldn't surge. But because of what we were able to do in West Africa, we were able to largely contain the outbreak there. And there are a lot of really dedicated civil servants that went into doing that work and still continue to make sure that the people of West Africa, even in this recovery period, have what they need. But it's not that we wouldn't have done it. The plans were there. It's just that we didn't have to do it because of the progression of the disease. But there are some differences that make what we call the pharmaceutical interventions such a critical component of this response and being able to contain it. But part of that is because of the asymptomatic nature of some of those COVID-infected individuals.
Reggie, thank you so much for your phone call. Congressman, I want to ask you, I have about 4 minutes left, but this is one of the things that's really important as we move forward. As this, and let us hope, hopefully speaking, prayerfully speaking, that we not only see a flattening of the curve, but we see the curve go away, that this eventually becomes, a history instead of what we must consistently live with. Do you see legislation on Capitol Hill that specifically addresses some of the health disparities for African Americans? Does there have to be a black bill on Capitol Hill to deal with this?
No, it doesn't have to be a black bill, but it has to be a health disparities bill, because that encapsulates many of us in the African-American community who, I said before, suffer from chronic obstructive pulmonary diseases like emphysema and bronchitis and asthma and lupus and cardiovascular disease and cancer and diabetes and HIV and full-blown AIDS. We are all disproportionately represented in those groups in terms of the number of persons suffering. So if there is a bill and a targeted, directly intentional targeted bill at health disparities, that encapsulates that, and it picks up other groups while you do it. But I just believe more than anything else that this is going to pass, and we're going to take our eye off of the issue. And the last 10 years that I've spent ringing the alarm or ringing the bell on this makes me believe that, you know, it's almost like, what's the next news story? And then it goes off of the front pages, and we're too preoccupied. And yet we know that our communities suffer more, we live less years, and our lifestyles are seriously compromised as a result of the stress, the blatant racism, the second and third generational issues that are carried over from one generation to another, which is why, in addition to everything else, we have to have a strong faith in God, and we have to really believe in the power of prayer along with everything else. Now, that's kind of okey-doke, and nobody wants to talk about that anymore, but I believe strongly that in times like this, we need the power of prayer. We need good sense so that we know what we have to do, and we have to take care of one another.
I think that is a great way to, you know, address this issue. Dr. Lewis Saint, I have 30 seconds. I'll let you have the last word.
The most important part of this is focusing on how we rally together to get through this, how we take care of one another, even if that means social distancing and staying apart in order to take care of someone and demonstrate your love. But when this is all over, we do have to remember this moment, and we have to remember to continue to advocate for the ways that our communities, our nation can be more prepared and more ready for the future disasters to come, because I assure you there will be more, but we do have an opportunity to use this as a moment to first focus on getting through it and then focus on being more prepared in the future.
I want to thank both of you for, you know, sharing your insight, your expertise, and just your support of making sure that the African-American community is constantly getting the best, most accurate information, because we really, really need it. And Congressman Mfume, I wholeheartedly approve of your comments about prayer as well. We need to stay prayed up during this most difficult time. So former Maryland Congressman Kwaisi Mfume and Dr. Nicolette Lusain, thank you so much for sharing with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, April 13th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Stay safe, everyone, and good night.